Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our Monday night Hoops HD report, recording here a little after 9 p.m. on Monday, December 2nd. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined below me by John Salica, off to the side by David Griggs and Joby Fortson. And this is the podcast where we're talking about everything that's been going on in college basketball, I believe. Correct, David?
Yes. We have had an extremely busy week, the busiest week of the year. That includes championship week in the sense, I'm not saying it's the most important or the most high drama, but it is the time of the year where most happens. I think we know a lot more about the landscape of college basketball than we did a week ago. It has sort of taken shape now. Everyone has played just about six, but you know, between six and nine games. That's about how many football plays before the playoff committee starts releasing their poll. So while there's going to be a lot to, you know, while we have a long way to go and a lot will change, not quite as much and as drastically in one singular week as it did this past week.
And that's just on the court, because we also had some off the court fireworks that were fired off a couple hours before we went to air.
Yeah, yes. We're going to get to that. We're going to get. I want to get to that in a few minutes here, but I think I want to start with something that did happen on the court over the course of the past week, where we saw a team that was unranked last week tie the record for the biggest jump into the polls after not being ranked at all last week. Like I said, number four in this week's AP poll, five of the coaches poll. The Michigan Wolverines had an unbelievable week down in Atlantis. I'll pull the screen up here with their schedule. They coming up with a 7-point win over Iowa State, a double-digit win, or not, I guess it was 9-point win over North Carolina, and a double-digit win over Gonzaga down there.
Carolina got it down to 9. It was 18 at one point.
Yeah, it
was not that close, exactly.
Yeah. Got it down in garbage time. But, again, to go up against Gonzaga and North Carolina, both of whom, by all accounts, are really good and have proven it, it's not that they were ranked high. It's that both North Carolina and Gonzaga were ranked high and had already beaten some pretty good teams. And Michigan just trucked them both. What a showing. And they earned that number four ranking. We've seen teams on the 1 and 2 line, maybe not the one line, but on the two line, that didn't have two wins against top 10 teams away from home all year. Michigan getting it done in about a 24-hour period. What a performance. And I'm curious, Chad, what was the other team? And when was that, when they went unranked all the way up to four?
Kansas did it about 15 years ago or something like that. It was way, way back. Maybe even in the 90s, maybe 20 years ago. But, with that, we've now got – we were talking last week about the ACC having three teams in the top 10. Joby, we have three teams in the top six now in the Big Ten with Maryland, Michigan, and Ohio State.
And all deserving. What's great about every one of those situations, because I do think Maryland's win over Temple is an underrated, very good win.
Oh, yeah, I agree. When we get to the American.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is all of them have earned their ranking. A lot of the ACC teams, they got the benefit of having, as we've discussed a lot on this show, starting off the year against conference opponents, thus making that splash. Good move by the ACC for promotion purposes. But they also started high. Virginia is the defending champ. They're going to get the benefit of that in the polls. North Carolina, Duke are blue bloods, and Louisville was one of the hot picks preseason. The fact of the matter is Michigan wasn't a hot pick. Maryland was a top 10 team, but they've really shown it. And Ohio State has more than climbed up the ladder, and deservedly so. So give the Big Ten a lot of credit, because they've earned that rating.
The only word of caution I would have for Ohio State at this point, all their games have been at home, but at least in their two highest profile games against Cincinnati and Villanova, they did dump truck both of the teams.
Right. I talk about dump trucking Maryland, very impressive over Marquette in the championship game of the Orlando Invitational there yesterday. It was, a 21-point win by Maryland. And you throw in there Purdue, David, looked really good in that win, in their win over, was it VCU on Friday? They picked up a win there. The 3-point win, but of a good VCU team. Iowa with a real nice win over Texas Tech, although they did then lose to San Diego State in the championship game of their
event. Yeah, a really good San Diego State team. And I know they lost to San Diego State, and I don't mean this as backhanded praise. They played better than what I thought they would against a team that I personally think is really, really good. San Diego State, we'll get to them when we get to the Mountain West, not in the rankings, but probably should be. And Iowa, I mean, when you go back to what they did against DePaul a couple of weeks ago, they're certainly much, much improved. And DePaul's good. We'll get to them. A lot of things in the Big East are not good. We're going to get to a lot of stuff tonight.
Yeah, I guess we got to do a little oh by the way here, Joby. Too, you still have Michigan State in this conference. We always forgot about them, but yeah, they lost the game to Dayton, but they bounced back, beating Georgia and UCLA to finish, I guess, with two wins out in Maui.
Right.
They lost. They lost to Va Tech, didn't they?
UCLA's.
I'm sorry, Va Tech.
I'll take actually Michigan's win over Iowa State more than the win over the Bruins. But Michigan State, I'd still look at that at Seton Hall win. That's a really solid win. This is a team that can still win it all, and it's just they've gotten two losses against good teams. Early on in the season, it happens.
You see here the predictive metrics, like KenPom, still the number one of the nation.
Yeah, well, KenPom is still very stuck on preseason bias right now. Okay. So I think you almost want to look at something like, you know, like strength of record is not, you know, I'm stuck a little on preseason bias in the J&G, but not as much. Strength of record is no proof bias. So you want to see how teams played, like that Michigan team that we've been praising earlier. They're one in strength of record for a reason. I actually think right now good for strength of record on that end.
And I guess, Stalika, let me ask you about one other team here. We haven't mentioned them yet. They're undefeated. Indiana Hoosiers?
That would be a fraudulent 7-0 at this point.
Okay.
Although the price of poker is going to go up this week thanks to the ACC Big Ten Challenge in the first two games in Big Ten play.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Indiana, but I'm not sold that they're not good either. I'm curious to see what they can do once they leave the pastry cart. Chad, if I can ask you about a team, how about your Rutgers Scarlet Knights at 6-1? And I know that it's a lot of it's been bye games, but they don't look that bad.
Well, we're going to find out a lot this week about the Scarlet Knights. They are undefeated in the United States. You know, that Bonnie's this loss of St. Bonaventure, who is not that good of a team.
No, they're
not. Did happen outside of the country in Toronto, but tomorrow night they're at Pitt in a winnable game in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, I think. Then they go right to conference play with a game at Michigan State on Sunday. So,
but the team we should be asking questions about is going to be Penn State, because they actually dump-trucked Syracuse last week in Brooklyn and lost a heartbreaker against Ole Miss, but when you look at what they have coming up, they have a winnable game at home against Wake, and then they go to Ohio State on Saturday.
Yeah, and just had a great week for Big Ten here, Joby. They'll be aside from the ACC Big Ten Challenge that's going on today through Wednesday, right from then we go into early season conference play this weekend. Yeah. I mean, you're really going to find a lot of things about all of these Big Ten teams, aren't we?
Well, and I think Indiana is really, you know, we talk about Indiana because of their, you know, pastry cart, as David well put. But look at the other end of it. Wisconsin has really struggled out of the gates this year.
Yeah, they have.
And so that Indiana-Wisconsin game has a lot of implications for both teams, not just, oh, is Indiana for real, but Wisconsin, can you get it together? Because if they were to lose at home against Indiana, uh-oh. I think that tournament streak is in very serious jeopardy at that.
In a tournament streak of 1 year?
Yeah,
Wisconsin doesn't have a tournament streak right now, Joey.
1 year. 1 year.
It's in jeopardy, though.
Is in jeopardy.
Obviously, the game of the week, though, tomorrow night, Michigan at Louisville, number one versus number four, number one versus number two, Joby, according to your J, not on the screen yet, but tomorrow morning's J&G rankings, we expect Michigan to go all the way up to number one,
yep.
Do some adjustments. Louisville should be number two. We're going to have the top two teams in the nation coming up Tuesday.
And how about this? You know, less than a month into the season, we're having our third matchup between top four teams. None of the top four teams in this game were in the previous two top four matchups.
What's funny is their state mates were, though. Michigan State.
Yeah, I know. Michigan State. That is funny. I didn't make that connection. Yeah, but this one should be, God, Clash of the Titans. Now, if Michigan gets this one, this is something we should have talked about before the show, because I'm about to spring some trivia on you here that I don't know the answer to. When was the last time a team won three games against top 10 teams away from home? Michigan about to do it in a week's time. Assuming that Gonzaga and North Carolina stay as good as we think they're going to.
I don't have that answer. What I do think is I'd be shocked if we're seeing 4 and 5 here next week if Michigan gets that win and obviously picks up their win over the weekend against Iowa at home. They should be 1-1 next week. Polls.
I mean, that is a hell of a profile already.
Let's talk about some other conferences. We could probably do an entire podcast of the Big Ten with what happened and what's coming up this week. The rest of these ACC Big Ten Challenge games as well. Well, let's talk about a couple of those games a little bit more, though. Let me flip over to the ACC. That's not the ACC. Let's go to the ACC, actually.
That's the American channel.
Yeah, the American is not
SMU the SMU is not in the
they
ACC.
They are not the – and the American is definitely not.
Where we do have the new number one team of the nation, the Louisville Cardinals. They beat Western Kentucky this week. I think that was the only game.
Oh, man. And were the voters ever impressed with that? That Facebook Live ridiculous broadcast with comments and hearts and thumbs and, like, stupid live decal that covered up the clock so nobody knew how much time was left.
Joby, the number two team, at least scored to the coaches' poll, and your current J&G rankings did even better, beat with a 46-26 win over Maine as their only game this week.
Who would have thought that? Who would have thought that the football team would be in a higher scoring game against Bud Foster's Virginia Tech defense than the basketball team's game this week? I mean, and it's true. The defense is suffocating. The defense is one of the best at this early season that I have seen. You've heard me say it. However, there are major offensive issues. This Virginia team has a
– Yes, I am offended.
Has a ceiling. If they can't get Casey Morsell, who showed a lot against Arizona State, if they cannot get a Casey Morsell, a Cody Stratman, if they can't start hitting from the outside, this Virginia team is in trouble because the best outside shooter right now really is Mamadi Diakite. Great for his chance to be a first-round pick next year. Not so good for the team.
Yes, and to build on what Joby just said, this is a team with problems. Tony Bennett, that seat is starting to get a little warm.
Salika, Florida State is sitting at 7-1. They picked up a real nice win over Tennessee as well as the win over Purdue. So nice showing by them this week.
Yeah, starting to feel like an aberration where they opened their season with a loss against Pitt, but they had a couple nail biters. The first being against Tennessee, and then they had an overtime game against Purdue where they were able to fend off a late shot by the Boilers. So they end up winning the Emerald Coast Classic and once again looking like maybe not the favorite, but they'll certainly be a contender all season long in the ACC, it would appear.
And Joby, I got to go back to you for a second. Salika and Dave were both on the Under the Radar podcast with me last week. You were not, but we had an amazing game last Tuesday. So we go, I still have the picture here with 0.2 seconds left. I'm sure you enjoyed this one very much. With Nathan Bain from Stephen F. Austin making the shot at the buzzer to knock down the Blue Devils for the first time in 10 million years at home in a non-conference game.
That shows you, though, something. I mean, what's funny is it's not like Duke has done the Syracuse thing and just played bye games in all these home years for years and years and years. They play really good teams. They bring really good teams in the camera.
Every now and then.
And then they bring in Stephen F. Austin, who's picked in the middle of the Southland.
who hasn't been anything since Underwood left. Yeah, and my goodness, good for Stephen F. Austin. Steve F. Austin is better than we think, maybe? Or will they be?
Yes, they are. They missed the Southland tournament last year.
Yeah, I mean,
we knew that they were injured. I don't think we thought they would be anything more than fourth or fifth in the Southland.
But this could
slightly
be
better than that.
This could be an Evansville thing with a relatively young team, though Duke is now missing players going forward for this week's clash, which is being hyped of all hypes between them and Michigan State. So we're going to see if Duke Duke might have a couple of losses in weeks if they are not careful. And then going to Black, a resurgent Virginia Tech team who is playing. They had the win over Michigan State, but they're just playing better, even in their losses. Duke could have a rough week, but they also could show a lot this week. This is a big movement week for Duke. We're going to learn a lot about the strength of Duke this week, more than probably any other week this year.
Right, and it's another team with a huge week this week, though. David is the North Carolina Tar Heels hosting, yes, Ohio State in a great game on Wednesday night in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and then, oh, by the way, you got to go to Virginia on Sunday.
Yeah, and it is big, especially coming off of kind of getting popped in the mouth a little bit down in was it Atlantis?
Atlantis, Battle
for Atlantis. Atlantis. Okay, yeah,
well, by Michigan, the aforementioned.
Yeah, by Michigan. Yeah. Did they lose the consolation game as well, or the third?
They beat Oregon in the third.
Yeah, they beat Oregon in the third place game. So still not a bad showing to go down there to lose to what is now a top four team and then get a nice win away from home. But a lot on their plate this week, especially with it being a conference game, should be crazy. But again, what is the downside if they lose both games? I mean, none of those losses are going to clip them that much.
No, I don't think those losses will clip them that much, but it is two more losses this early in the season, yeah, and that's what you got to pay attention to here.
Yeah.
Salika, let me head over to you here. Let's talk. You opened up the show with a little bit of Georgetown news. Why don't you tell us what happened in Georgetown as we turn over to the Big East?
No, I didn't mention Georgetown by name, but just before we went on to air, we learned that James Akinjo and I think it was Josh McClung LeBlanc have been dismissed from the team and have immediately entered the transfer portal for whatever that's worth.
Do we know they were dismissed, or did they just leave? Like, it was just announced that they were no longer
John Thompson. Patrick Ewing announced that they are no longer on the team. That's the Georgetown is not stating anything more as to the reasons why. And we're not going to speculate as to any reasons why, but we're talking about last year's freshman of the year in Akinjo and the Big East Conference. We're talking about the top big man off the bench in LeBlanc. This is a unbelievably huge blow to a Georgetown team that we thought might be able to even make a shot at an NCAA tournament bid this year. It's gone now. It's done.
Yeah, they had that really good showing in Madison Square Garden at the whatever tournament that was, the NABC, where they played Texas.
That was the 2K Empire Classic.
Yeah, I remember the games, not the tournament, which I guess that doesn't matter. That's how the committee remembers it. But we're feeling pretty good about them. Losing at home over the weekend to UNC Greensboro, but even that, while not expected, wasn't all that damaging, because if you follow us, you know that we've been big on Greensboro really since back in September. But this is a team this is really taking their legs out from under them. I mean, this is a huge setback. When you lose your starting point guard, that is that key of a player. I just don't know if you can even be competitive. Is this team going to finish in the top half of the league? Are they going to be anywhere near the bubble now? What a blow. Oh, my God.
Well, it's going to take them about a month to get their chemistry issues straightened out. But between Georgetown, Providence, and St. John's, I can now see at least the top half of the Big East about as close to licking their chops as they're going to get, because you're still not going to get any breathers in this league come conference play, but this is about as close as you're going to find at this point.
Providence with an almost pathetic seventh place finish, almost eighth place. They barely got by Pepperdine out in the wood. And yeah. Bad, bad team at Providence. Joby, go ahead.
Well, the one thing you got to remember about Georgetown is they were very fortunate that the transfer portal went their way. Allen from UCF, who is the starting point guard for Central Florida, is now at Georgetown. Last year's UCF starting point guard. So while Akinjo leaving is a big hit, now this just means next man up. They actually have a man up, you know, that they can go to that is not falling off a cliff. I think this might be a fatal blow, like you guys said, to their chances of going to the dance. But I'm not going to completely, you know, nail the coffin shut yet.
Well, how about this conference? Like, when let's assess it real quick. Providence with four starters back, we were really expecting big things from them. As you mentioned earlier, not delivering. Georgetown with this big blow. Nova, I think, is going to hit their stride, but as of now, they haven't really done much more other than win bye games. I know LaSalle technically isn't, but it practically is. So sort of some disappointment out of some teams we were expecting.
Wait, time out, David, time out.
But on the flip side.
Yes, let's look at the, who's in first place. Number one. Side,
DePaul, Butler, teams that we, like, had no, like, Butler, with their injury issues and the fact that they were barely 500 last year and had almost nothing back. We were thinking they were going to be 9th or 10th. Unbeaten on the year, some really nice wins, and deservedly so in the rankings. And then look at DePaul with wins at Iowa, who we just got done talking about earlier.
And Minnesota.
Boston College of Minnesota.
And I remember saying during the conference preview, I thought, well, if everything goes right, DePaul will probably finish 8th in the conference. Now 8th would be a disappointment.
And look at that strength of record, too. I already commented.
Number 2 in the nation.
Number 2. And I think strength of record – is one of, besides my own, is probably one of the best things to look at this stage of the season when you look at metrics.
This DePaul team, I got one word, David, believe.
Yeah.
I believe in them.
I believe.
I'm buying in. I am on the DePaul bandwagon full speed ahead.
Yeah, and when you win three true road games against, and I'm not saying that these were world beaters, but these are the caliber of games that you would expect tournament teams to win. They've done it. They won at Boston College. They won at Minnesota, who's, you know, by the way, leading Clemson
by 7 right now.
Yeah, and won at Iowa, and won huge at Iowa. And they have looked good. If you watch them play, they look good. Their worst moment was being down 18 to Central Michigan, but they came back and won. They dominated the second half. They made adjustments. And to me, that says that this team – I don't think that that's a team struggling for a half that isn't really that good. To me, that says that they're resilient. And they can come back and win the games that you expect them to win.
And
this is a good DePaul. I believe. I'm with you, Chad. This is not just, oh, look at DePaul, 2-0, how cute. No, this DePaul team is for real. This is a tournament-caliber team.
Well, in addition to the ACC Big Ten Challenge, we are starting the Big 12 Big East series this week. It's going to take about 3 weeks to play all the games. But right there, you see one of the first game in the series here coming up Wednesday night. Texas Tech at DePaul, the defending national champions. Chance for another huge statement against a name, even though Texas Tech has been a little disappointing this year.
So. They've been a lot disappointing. You've seen them both play. Who do you like more? I think DePaul's looked better.
We also have a huge rivalry game coming up, Sleek, on Saturday. I'm not talking Nebraska Creighton. I'm talking your crosstown shootout.
Well, that's going to be one of the rivalry games, but you've also got the Holy War on Saturday as well with Nova and St. Joe's matching up.
Right, but how about this Cincinnati Xavier game, and how about your Musketeers?
Well, the Musketeers, they just had what amounted to one tune-up game against Lipscomb, where at least their offense looked about as fluid as I've seen all year, and their defense not quite as stout as it's been earlier in the year against teams like Jacksonville and Siena, Missouri, and Missouri State, among others. But Cincinnati's, we'll get into later on, they've been struggling this year, and wouldn't surprise me to see the Bearcats coming into that game with the loss.
David, what's going on down there?
Well, this segment of the show is the Gold Star Chili presents the Skyline Chili Crosstown Shootout.
Okay.
If anybody from Cincinnati is watching, Gold Star is better. I know you don't think it is, but you're wrong.
I think Gold Star should be sponsoring a rivalry like NKU and Wright State, though.
I thought the big rivalry game was going to be those people from West Virginia coming to Manhattan. See beautiful Madison Square Garden.
And not the Manhattan they normally go to. Speaking of teams from Manhattan, Joby, let's hop over to the Big 12 where, our friend Rocco called this West Virginia team heading into the season. I did not believe him, but, you know, are you starting to believe in West Virginia at this point?
No.
Okay.
Wow, you didn't even think about it.
Northern Iowa's a good win. Don't get me. I mean,
no,
I,
so is Rhodey. Rhodey was at home. But
I mean, let's Rhodey's at home. But I actually thought
that blew that game.
The Rhodey game was giving me the no. is because they should dump Trent Brody, who I don't think is that good. And are they better than last year? How could they not be? They were so disappointing last year. Huggins is a good coach. They're not as good as their record, plain and simple. They're going to fade back. Could they make the tournament? Certainly. The Big 12, every team in the Big 12 can make the tournament because that's how deep and strong that conference is. But should we be thinking protected seed for these guys? No. That's silly. It's just insanity.
Yeah, the KPI is one. The NET is one. The RPI is one. I mean, those are some pretty good
metrics. Well, minor top 10, and they're top 10 with J&J in the strength of record. But, you know, I just don't see it long term.
Funny thing is, I thought we'd be having the for real or fraud discussion as far as Oklahoma State is concerned. Well,
that was my other question, Stalika. Why don't you answer that? How about
them? You had them on your two lines, Stalika.
You got a nice win over Syracuse and did unholy things to Ole Miss after Ole Miss had just been Penn State.
I'm telling you, it's the Barry Hinson effect. I can't explain it any other way.
Oklahoma State was one of two teams that I called out, or three teams that I called out in the bracket that was published a week ago saying, watch out, they're right now in a protected seed line and the national media is not giving them their due. The other two teams were DePaul and a Temple team were going to be discussed.
They did break the top 25 in the coaches poll, Oklahoma State, at number
20.
I haven't looked at the coaches poll yet, but there they are.
They are a better team right now, looking at the eye test. They're a better team than West Virginia.
And this is another team that's been able to –
they're both teams that can make the tournament. They both could make the tournament, but right now I have more confidence in Oklahoma State.
David, I got to ask you, is there something going on? Is there problems in Texas Tech? They finish in fourth place in the tournament.
Well, yeah, they've won their bye games, and every time they've been even remotely challenged, they haven't come through. And the teams that they've beaten, while decent, are nothing more than that. So, like, you know, this was a team that I think I picked them to get back to the Final Four. Now, they still could hit their stride and come together, but no, they haven't shown it. How could you not be concerned? What have they done that would convince anyone that all is well there?
I agree with you. I am concerned about that team. Stalika, we have a few other interesting games coming up this week, notably Colorado at Kansas, Arizona at Baylor, a couple Pac-12 teams coming to Big 12 teams in could be sneaky good games.
Yeah, Colorado is another team that's going to be much improved defensively and should be a test against Kansas right here. And also looking at Arizona and Baylor, which might actually be the game of the week here because Arizona, they weren't dominant against Wake Forest, but certainly played well enough to end up winning the whole tournament down in Anaheim. And Baylor, they're already coming off of a win in the Myrtle Beach Invitational.
Yeah, obviously the rivalry game here, Texas and Texas A&M.
Yeah,
it should be a blowout, but who knows? Texas is disappointed at times too.
Yeah, and I'm glad you pointed that out, Chad. This rivalry has been dormant for a while. They did play in, I want to say, the Battle for Atlantis a few years ago. The coaches have wanted it. The fans have wanted it. I'm glad that it's finally back, even if this edition is probably not going to be very competitive. They're all sold out. It is kind of a big deal. Nothing like what the football game would be if and when, and I do think it will someday resume. But I'm glad that this is one of those dormant rivalries, not anything like the Border War. Nothing's like the Border War. We need the Border War back. I'm glad it's – what's the countdown? We're about 380. Should we just talk about the Border War for the rest of the
show? Joe, how about the Seton Hall Iowa State game on Sunday? I think maybe I'd rather discuss that one. That could also be it. I mean, tough road test for Seton Hall.
Yeah, I mean, the Hall's already lost, as we mentioned earlier, to Michigan State. But there are good – Hurley's got a – he's doing – Hurley.
Hurley.
Man, he's doing incredible things.
Willard, but they're already building a strong case once again to make the tournament this year. Iowa State, though, I'm just confused.
That's a good way to put it.
I mean, it's not going to be a good loss if they lose to Iowa State because it will not. This is the one team that has struggled. We talk about Texas Tech, but Texas Tech, I think with Chris Beard, could turn around and they could. they could challenge for the Big 12 title with the way
they
play. With that, they're just getting their defense together. It's a lot of new faces, is my argument. Iowa State just doesn't look very good. They look out of sorts. This is the one Big 12 team that could represent the traditional route that TCU played for so many years at the Big 12, the team that helped everybody else because everybody got two wins against them.
And, yeah, that's the same role that Iowa State played 2 years ago.
I assume Iowa State will not be that just because the program is too strong for that. But yeah, Seton Hall should take care of business. And if they don't, that tells me more about Seton Hall than it does Iowa State.
That's fair. We mentioned both Arizona and Colorado on those road trips. Let's take a quick look at the Pac-12, where Arizona 9-0. Liberty should reach 10-0 tonight, but right now tied with the most wins of the nation with both Liberty and Delaware, of all teams. But also Colorado undefeated. So both those teams on the road with huge tests coming up this weekend. But Dave, what else did we see out of the Pac-12 this week? I guess we'll look at Oregon here with a pair of losses at Atlantis.
Yeah, a pair of losses. Both, you know, they had one pretty good win against Seton Hall. A pair of losses to highly ranked teams. So nothing too damaging. But you know, when you look at what they've done, I think they have the win. Is it Baylor that they beat, or who is the? They beat Seton Hall, and didn't they win another one that was pretty good?
Oregon?
Oh yeah, who'd they beat in the first? I thought Oregon
Seton Hall was the team Oregon beat in the first round.
They beat Seton Hall in the first round.
Who'd they beat earlier in the year? They beat somebody.
They had the Gonzaga-Oregon game.
They beat Memphis.
Memphis, thank you. Yeah, Memphis. We are on top of it tonight. I would have seen that had Chad had their profile up. But let's look at Arizona. It's 9-0, but is there some reason for pause here when you look at the way they've won some of those games and who they've won them against? 25 lead changes against Pepperdine, who is not at full strength, by the way. You know, needing a shot basically at the buzzer to win that one. Not exactly burying a Wake Forest team that we think is very NIT-ish, if that.
They struggled in the South Dakota State game at home.
Yeah, they did. And this is not a good South Dakota State team like what we've seen the last two or three years.
Mooney's not there.
Yeah, he's not. So Arizona 9-0, but does anything about them give you any sort of pause? And is Baylor going to basically blow their doors off this Saturday?
Well, and then that's where we get the real first real test. I know Arizona did win the Wooden Legacy. It was not a great field at the Wooden Legacy, but we'll get a real good showing of what Arizona is with this Baylor game on Saturday. That's their only game this week. A few other games. Fewer of the games of note, though, we have a couple big rivalries coming up on Wednesday. Salika, first of all, two teams only a few miles apart, Washington State, Idaho.
Oh, huge.
David, do you want to talk about Washington State, Idaho?
Well, I mean, we covered it on Under the Radar, but I don't know if you guys know this or not, but these teams are 8 miles apart, 8 miles apart. 7.4.
They've never met in the NCAA tournament. Yes,
and they've never met in the NCAA tournament. I don't know if there's any other rivalry that has that distinction.
Salika, let me give you. You mentioned the other Holy War. How about the Holy War? The real Holy War Wednesday night, BYU Utah.
Yeah, BYU Utah. Now we're going to be going back to campus for this one here. Utah has been floundering ever since their season opening win at Nevada, and also their blowout against Mississippi Valley State, but BYU has been kind of bubble-ish, but I would say more on the NIT side right now. But I think the real rivalry we have to be paying attention to is going to be Sunday. Can Washington finally clip Gonzaga?
After all, I think they can. I mean, they almost got them a year ago. This is a much improved Washington team. They're a lot better than I thought they'd be coming into the year. Gonzaga, while good and while tested, I think Washington has also been tested, and they've looked a little bit better. And, God, it's great to have this rivalry back. I hated when it went away. I was excited when they played in Atlantis a few years ago, and they announced a 4-year series. I believe this is game 3. I want this series to continue. I want it to be a fixture rivalry.
I also like the back-to-back San Francisco hostings. That's kind of fun.
Getting Arizona State and Cal.
Early on Arizona State, but then Cal crossing. Cal, who is playing better than I actually thought. I mean, they've played they already have as many wins now as they did practically all of last year. And they're going across the Bay Bridge. That's going to be a lot of fun. You know, back to back, you know, because San Francisco is, once again, the Dons are a lot better than the average fan will recognize. Not saying they're going to win.
They're pretty good. Yeah.
But they're solid team. And that's not going to be, we're not necessarily going to see them. Yeah. We're not going to necessarily see a bunch of blue at the Pac-12 automatically in Chad's sheet next week.
Now, if memory serves me correctly, I think San Francisco was actually supposed to play Arizona State last year, but that game ended up getting canceled because of wildfires that were going on at the time.
Yeah, I think it did.
So this is the makeup for that game, although, with David, it does not count towards last year's records. It counts towards this year's records.
Yes, real quick, just a quick 20-second question. We talk about rivalries a lot. Is BYU-Utah the most heated, active rivalry? Not the biggest, but the most bitter. I think that it is.
It's way up there. Louisville-Kentucky.
That one's really nasty. I think BYU and Utah might hate each other more.
But I pulled up the West Coast Conference because we just mentioned both San Francisco and Gonzaga just real quick. You see St. Mary's, Santa Clara, Portland all off to only one loss so far in the season. Joby, you know, what we saw out of Gonzaga with Michigan loss, but they won every other game, including that nice 1-point win over Oregon. Are you, is this Gonzaga team there? Are they top 10 good?
Yeah, they are. Plain and simple, they are. Because I'm a believer in that Oregon team. All we can go with at this stage of the season is simple transitive property from team. I think team A is good. So because team B beat them, that team B is good. Gonzaga is, and when I see them out there, they look like Gonzaga. They look like the Gonzaga that we've seen for the last, 5 years, I'll say, you know, just because that's when they've been elite, not just tournament good, but protected seed, fight for a 1 seed, 2 seed good. They're that again. And I'll be surprised, because I'm not as impressed as I thought I would be with St. Mary's this year. I would be surprised if they have more than 2 losses in the WCC this year.
Yeah. And you see, they've got, before the big game at Washington, they're hosting Texas Southern this week. That's really their game there. But let's jump back to the SEC. I skipped over them. Let me run back to them right now. Where, David, we do have 2 undefeated teams in Auburn and Arkansas?
Yeah, Arkansas, not exactly. I think that's more reflective of their schedule than them. Auburn with some pretty good wins. I know that Richmond isn't the kind of team that gets everybody excited, but I think it's a much better Richmond team than what people realize. I think Auburn's going to get a decent amount of credit for that. I'm really big on both of them. But really big on Auburn, not so much Arkansas.
I'll tell you what, Joby, let me ask you this, because more, you know, you doing the metrics and everything. When you look at the SEC, I'm seeing a lot more more than two lost teams that we're seeing in any of these other power conferences, and they haven't played conference play early like the ACC did. And you see a lot of red there on the screen on the
That's
right.
That's what I look at. Look at the red. Yeah. This was a bad week for the SEC, because I thought the SEC started off. Yeah, I mean, Kentucky stubs their toe against Evansville, but they also had a nice win.
They did.
Yeah. just small good win. But this week was a bad week. Don't let that Michigan State Georgia score fully. Michigan State had total control. South Carolina getting just boat raced at Wichita State. I mean, this is bad things are happening. And the North Carolina Alabama game. North Carolina, I think Alabama cut it to within 9 for the first time since 15 minutes to go in the first half on the final score. And Chaminade almost in Virginia and Louisville already. The ghosts of Ralph Sampson sit there. Yes, and they should have had that game.
Vanderbilt losing at home to Tulsa. Oof.
And the impressiveness, Arkansas being Northern Kentucky by 6. Way to go. Wake
Ole Miss losing 78-37 to Oklahoma State. It's a Stalika. Texas A&M loses to Fairfield. I, I, we look back to the days of a two or three bit SEC suddenly again?
Well, Texas A&M had the triple crown this weekend, taking eighth place down in Orlando. But yep. This is not a Wichita State-esque eighth place either. But I think to answer your question, though, I think the SEC is still probably going to end up, I would say, maybe six bids, but more likely four or five bids at this point.
LSU's looked worse than we expected to. We thought LSU was a solid top 20 team, maybe protected level.
And then Florida is another example of a team that they slumbered to start the year, but they looked much better down in Charleston.
But they struggled at home with Marshall though after that, so you don't know.
I'm still Florida has too much coming. I'm a little more bullish on Florida than LSU, but you know, hey, Tennessee lost to Florida State, and Florida lost to Florida State. I think Florida State's good. So Tennessee is. You lose Admiral Schofield, you know, Williams. That's a big deal. But Tennessee's still a very good team. They're going to be playing the tournament. And they're going to be wearing white. You know.
And then there's a case of Ole Miss where they actually handed Penn State their only loss, but the following day they get boat raced themselves by Oklahoma State.
They're hosting Butler tomorrow night in a real interesting
game. Not easy.
No, that's not. This is a good Butler team.
And then Butler hosts Florida on Saturday. But David, Butler may be the story of the SEC this week. There's two games.
Yeah.
Stephen F. Austin might be favored against Alabama.
I mean, one of the teams, Tennessee, you know, with them having to replace so much, getting the nice win, I want to say it was against VCU in the third place game down in Destin. Forget the name of the tournament, but that one.
Emerald Coast Classic.
Yeah, Emerald Coast. So, I mean, while they did lose their first game to, I want to say it was Florida State, I mean, they did get a nice win away from home on their profile. And I think they're at least meeting expectations. But, yeah, no one else really is. Now, I realize Auburn, other than Auburn. Yeah, and I realize Kentucky's expectations are exceptionally high. And they might not really kick it into gear until Christmas break anyway if things have gone like they have. But, yeah, you're right. A lot of teams underperforming. Jeez,
like Auburn Furman, watch that game because Furman, Palladians are once again a very tricky team.
Yeah, that, losing the night to
I
South
think Auburn should win it
a little bit,
but
that was the epitome of brutality.
Yeah,
Auburn better bring their A game. They can't bring their C game, or they're going to wind up with a loss. And that is still a very. I see what Bruce Pearl is doing at Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very impressed.
Joby, I'm very high on this Furman team, although, like David said, they did lose at South Florida tonight, but I don't think they could have it to beat Auburn. They may hang in for a half, but Auburn is way too good. Joby, let me actually, Sleeka, let me go to you here over at the American Conference, where we have one team in the top 10, in the top 15, which is Memphis, and we also have an undefeated team and an SMU team.
Fraud.
Nobody. Okay. So is there anything else worth discussing? Like maybe the Cincinnati Bearcats, who are 5-2 and kind of way down the middle of the page there.
Should be about two.
Yeah, Cincinnati already had a shaky tournament themselves down in the Paradise Jam, where they ended up losing a close one to Bowling Green and then needing overtime to survive against Valpo. And if you saw the game against UNLV, they started the second half down 11 points against the Running Rebels. Then they actually had a pretty good defensive second half. They take a 10-point lead with a minute to play. Rebels look dead, but lo and behold, they're actually able to force overtime, albeit with some questionable calls via replay or non-reviews in the case of one call where UNLV got, I think, three free throws, but they're shooter had a foot on the line, but UC never bothered to ask for a replay on that. But nonetheless, the Bearcats do survive that game, and they've got a real trap game at home against Vermont before the shootout.
And I got to tell you, though, Joby, I'm looking at the American more and more. I think Memphis, especially once they get Wiseman back, will be a real good team. Beyond that, the only team I'm kind of keeping an eye on here is this Temple team.
Let's talk about Temple.
Who bounced back with wins over A&M and Davidson in their event down there.
And I know Davidson hasn't been what – like Davidson was a chic pick, you know, at the beginning of the year, and they've certainly not delivered. But still, they have talent, and Temple just drilled them. That score is not indicative, in my opinion, of how good Temple played. Temple's been solid this year. They have a good they've built a good resume early on, and I think Temple can real is the problem Temple has is they'll probably go freaking 9-9 in conference, losing to the Houston, South Florida of the world. South Florida is the world. They won't lose to East Carolina, and then they'll split with Memphis.
You're not even mentioning Temple's best game, which was actually on Thursday against Maryland,
the game
where
they lost
had the Terrapins on the ropes.
Yes, they did. You're exactly right, John. The one loss they have is certainly not a not embarrassment. That told me Maryland is who we think they are, a top 10 team, and going to be challenging for a very high protected seed.
Yeah.
More than it was a situation of, Temple's overrated. Yeah, you know, I think – that was just a classic game between two teams that who knows might meet at some point, you know, in the Sweet 16, you know.
Right.
Or at least round of 32. How about that?
Yeah, it kind of with Joby, like Temple has it – well, again, there's new leadership there, but like Temple has a history of like dropping games that you wouldn't expect them to. But the game that impressed me the most out of the seven they played is the one they lost, because they had Maryland – it was a tremendous effort, and they were in a position to win that game. They led for much of it.
David, I want to ask about one other team in this conference. Last season, the Tulane Green Wave won four games all year.
Yeah.
Ron Hunter already has them with six wins.
Yeah, they've got a long way to go, and I know that they haven't been beating like top 40 caliber teams that are going to be quad one teams. But the improvement is extremely noticeable. Ron Hunter is a phenomenal coach. I've liked him ever since he was at IUPUI. You know, he did very well there. He certainly did well at Georgia State, multiple NCAA tournaments, a win in the NCAA tournament, going to the round of 32 in, I want to say it was 12 or 13, I forget the year. But, like, never really nationally appreciated the way that I thought he should be. But if anybody can get Tulane – going to where that they are a tournament contender, at least some of the time, it's him. He'll do very well there. He's already making a difference.
So some upcoming games of note in this conference. We already mentioned the Cincinnati's two games against Vermont and Xavier. We also wanted to keep an eye out on Memphis with an interesting week hosting a Bradley team that was in the NCAA tournament last year. Then with a trip on the road to UAB team was after a decent start. And circle this game Sunday, Wichita State at Oklahoma State. Could be a huge win for Wichita State if they can go in there and pick up that one.
Yeah, Wichita.
I can't imagine too many Memphis fans are going to be making that trip down to UAB for some reason.
It's not that long of a trip. They may make it.
It's about 3 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is it during the football game?
Yes.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Well, and they're all going to be in Memphis. They're all going to be in the Liberty Bowl cheering very loudly, which I suspect they will solidly win.
Okay. Yeah, the American stages.
Cincinnati is a fraud on the football side.
Yeah, stages the football game at the same time as is the Xavier-Cincinnati basketball game, Cincinnati playing Memphis in that game, and then Memphis basketball team also playing during that game. Nicely done by the American Conference.
Let's go real quick through two more conferences here before we get into final thoughts, but real quick over the Atlantic 10.
Love this league.
It's looking a lot better than it was last year, but, you know, VCU did suffer the loss to Purdue and to Tennessee to finish fourth place in that, although they both were really good games.
Yeah, they were.
They end up going 0-2 down in that Emerald Coast Classic, drop out of the top 25. But Dayton picked up a couple nice wins, and they're in the top 25 now.
And their loss, Dayton's loss, might, just as we were talking about Temple.
6 points to Kansas,
Dayton's
yeah.
loss might be what made me go, wow, that's a real team.
Yeah.
Oh, they were phenomenal in that.
They should have won that game. That they really should have beaten Kansas.
But yeah, and you kind of hate it because, like, there you are. Like, you have these two flagship teams both playing nationally ranked teams away from home, both, like, playing very, very good games, but yet, like, not getting the meat on their profile. Like, I mean, Georgia and Vatek are decent wins, but it's nothing like beating a solid first ballot team away from home. Like, as good as Dayton played and as much as they deserve that ranking, you kind of wish that their resume had a little more to show for it. And same with VCU losing two really close games against really good teams. I guess my question is, if we could get both of those up, Chad, like, what opportunities do they have left prior to conference play?
Sure, I'll put up Dayton here on the left-hand side, and you can see Dayton the green column is the remaining schedule.
Dayton is a classic team that will play to the level of their competition. That's good when you're in a tournament like Maui playing Georgia, Virginia Tech, and Kansas. It's not good when you're playing with their food against Indiana State and even to a lesser extent Omaha and Charleston Southern that weren't blowouts the entire time.
Yeah, it quickly turns to these
Colorado schedules. And St. Mary's, those are opportunities for
you. Those are both North neutral court games. When it comes to VCU, a road trip to Wichita may be the best remaining non-conference game left on there.
Yeah, I expect these teams. I really think Dayton is for real this year. I mean, I expect them to win 25-26, being on the first ballot. But, you kind of wish that these teams had another shot at a couple of heavyweights or nationally ranked teams other than each other.
Yeah, real quick, the upcoming schedule here in the A-10 is up there on the screen. I know that St. Bonaventure, I believe, did pick up that win tonight against Florida Atlantic. They did. Other than that, I'm not certain what else we're looking at.
So at least we can finally say Feast Week is over now that St. Bonaventure has the win in the books.
Yeah. Real quick, over to the Mountain West, and let's talk to Joe. Let's talk a little San Diego State. I'm very impressed by what I saw out of this team this week.
Yeah, wow. Iowa and Creighton aren't the best Iowa and Creighton teams ever. But
score against Creighton, though.
I'm not going to jump for joy on San Diego State. But the fact is, their 8-0 is a well-deserved and earned 8-0. They have done what they need to do in the preseason today to qualify for a bid, assuming you do well in the Mountain West, which is still a relatively solid conference, at least at the top.
Yeah, at the very top.
The top two, yeah.
Top of this conference.
The top two, San Diego State, yeah. Utah State. Yeah.
Boise is a good team.
Go ahead. Boise is a good team.
Nevada had the Martins last year.
Boise is one of the best teams in the state of Idaho.
Yeah.
but the fact is, as long as San Diego State doesn't, just do a bunch of crappy moves during conference play, San Diego State's, when we're talking about Dayton, I think they certainly don't have Dayton's profile at the present time, but they have the potential to be, they're in the tournament, sort of like afterthought, they're an 8-9 seed, no problem, sort of thing. I think they're on that trajectory right now.
Well, David, what about Utah State, though? We didn't mention when we did the West Coast, but they did, St. Mary's did beat them in their only loss of the season so far.
Yeah, no shame in that, but I, they don't have a whole lot of, meat on their resume yet. I still think that they're really good, but if you ask me who I like more at this point, I like San Diego State a little bit more. I still like this Utah State team. Going to St. Mary's and winning is really hard to do. St. Mary's probably a tournament team themselves. But, I mean, just the way San Diego State has looked in multiple games, and they had a bigger win earlier in the year too. If you pull those two up, side by side, San Diego State just looks a little bit better.
Yeah, I think San Diego State has done more with what they did this week against Creighton and against Iowa. But and obviously Utah State lost the game to St. Mary's. Utah State's best did win that game against LSU. That was –
Yeah, and see, there's the San Diego State also getting the win at BYU. BYU, while not great, is still tough to beat at home.
Yeah, and in terms of the upcoming schedule, with their conference tournament being a week earlier due to the Tractor Conference or something like that in Vegas, yes. we have the start of conference play not only in the Big Ten and the ACC this week, but we also have conference play in the Mountain West Wednesday and Saturday.
There's your front range game, Puppet.
Yes, sir.
San Diego State's at Colorado State and hosting San Jose State. Utah State at San Jose State and hosting Fresno. So they should both be 2-0 after this week. I guess on that note, then let me pull this down here. And let's turn to some final thoughts. Actually, before we get to the final thoughts, let me do a quick shout out here. I know it's under the radar, but I got to note Cameron Parker from Sacred Heart, who yesterday against Pine Manor in a 101-57 Sacred Heart win picked up 24 assists, an NCAA record. So congrats to Cameron Parker and Sacred Heart. But let's run through each of you for any final thoughts. Joby?
Sure.
Key tip, a race for it. Into the hands of Clark. Got a chance to win here. Up the front is the key tip for the win.
The best worst call in the history of basketball for the win.
For the tie.
But we didn't talk about during that. Yes, that play will be shown, I have a feeling, a zillion times, much to friends of ours like Jerry Palm's much regret, our Purdue friends. But yes, that I wanted to celebrate and revel in what is the best worst call in the history of basketball. one other final thought that I will mention, we already know because Virginia, as you know, last year won the battle for Atlantis and Villanova won it the year before. So we might as well just send the trophy to Ann Arbor now because it is over.
Congrats to the Michigan Wolverines. And that's it for a season, everybody. We'll see you again in the 2020. Oh, Sleek, your thoughts?
You don't have an over-under yet on that Virginia-Purdue game, do you?
I think in the KenPom pace stats, Purdue is 352nd, and Virginia, as we all expect, is 353. That is out of 353 teams. I would like to know the over-and-under. Stalika, go to your final thought, and I will tell you the over-and-under by the time we get back.
Yeah, my final thought is actually going to be about Wake Forest as well. On the surface, it looked like they had a pretty nice weekend there, finishing second, that included a couple wins along the way, but also a little bit of bad behavior from, I guess, some of their players, because a couple of their starters, I think, actually ended up getting benched for the Arizona game. Not sure what happened at Disneyland, but we'll have to see if that's a one-game thing or whether that's going to be multiple games going on for the Deacons.
Yeah, just a quick note, Joby, it's 349 in tempo for Purdue right now. They picked up a few spots. Virginia is 353 in tempo, though. David, you want to finish things out?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the teams that we've learned the most about or that we were the most wrong about. And by we, I just mean in general the consensus. Michigan's a lot better than we thought. I think San Diego State and Dayton are also a lot better than we thought. I mean, if we could peer into the future back then, I don't think we would have seen those teams along with Butler and Dayton. And then the teams that have been sort of disappointing, certainly Davidson. I don't know about anybody else that's really just kind of fallen off of the edge of the earth, but you know, it's just that just goes to show you that, you know, no matter how much research you do or how much you think you know in October, until you get through Feast Week, you're kind of just guessing.
I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us here. Joe, did you find out that information or no?
No, it'll be posted at midnight.
Strictly for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, a little bit of an announcement. Like moving forward, like last year we had fun with Handy and Durahead. This year we've decided, I think, that whatever tractor show or engineering show that's taking place at the Thomas and Mack Center will sponsor the segment every week where we discuss the Mountain West.
That sounds good to me. We'll get some more information on that for next week, everybody. But
yeah,
on that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of David Griggs, Joby Fortson, and John Salika, I'm Chad Sherwood, and we will talk to you again real soon.